Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with John Gruden, Brian Cranston, James Gandolfini, John Hamm, Peter Dinklage, Michael K. Williams. Must all move over and make room for a new champion. John Gruden is the best actor on television. The 5-star reviews from his performance last night on Hard Knocks are pouring in. And not since Cranston portrayed drug kingpin Walter White in Breaking Bad has an actor received the kind of praise Gruden has for playing the role of swashbuckling Raiders head coach John Gruden. One reviewer hailed Gruden's performance as breathtaking. Another called it stunning. Magnificent is the word that best describes Gruden's work last night. For me, Gruden's performance brought back memories of the great Walton Goggins' portrayal of Shane Vendrell in the series finale of The Shield. Goggins and Gruden are both method actors. They stay in character off screen. But a source connected to HBO told me Gruden's performance was most influenced by Ian McShane's portrayal of Al Swearengen in Deadwood. You decide for yourself. Take a look.
More than anything, I want better execution. Are we clear on that? I want better execution. I want you to get a little bit pissed off. All right, not a lot of people expect very much from us. Do they? Do they? You've been reading about us? Not a lot of people expect enough from us. I'm tired, man. I'm tired of reading about it. It's time for you to stick your foot up somebody's man.
The problem is Gruden is gonna have to the football players aren't nearly as gullible as TV critics. I mean, I love Gruden's tough guy shtick, but I don't play for the Oakland Raiders. I talk sports on TV. Gruden is gold for me. If I'm on the Raiders and my coach is yelling at me on Hard Knocks about sticking a foot in someone's rear end, I'm like, you go first and start with Antonio Brown. A locker room is a tough crowd. There are about 15 players on the Raiders roster who are impressed by Antonio Brown's career and contract. The rest are either indifferent or thinking AB is a talented buffoon. The vast majority of the Raiders believe Gruden and his sidekick, Mike Mayock, were fools for dumping Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack and trading for Antonio Clown. Gruden's tough guy shtick rings hollow inside the Raiders locker room because the players are watching Gruden grovel at AB's feet.
I don't know what anybody's writing or what anybody thinks, but this foot injury wasn't his fault. You know, this was a total accident. It really wasn't his fault, and it's a serious injury. I know some people are smarting at it, but it's really not a laughing matter. The guy was hurt. He was innocent. He didn't do anything wrong.
All right, does that sound like a coach who wants to put a foot in someone's backside? AB undermines a head coach. He did it to Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, and he's doing it to John Gruden in Oakland. Gruden's like a dull knife, just ain't cutting. Talking loud, then saying nothing. Yep, John Gruden, the hardest working man in football, epitomizes the James Brown song, Talking Loud and Saying Nothing. Gruden's performance is going to win an Emmy. It won't win many games. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts Eric Mangini and LeVar Arrington. Marcellus, start us off. Is John Gruden's stick working with his players?
Absolutely, it's working. It's always worked. This is nothing new, and this is a problem with access. When people get access, like the Hard Knocks to 24/7, they think they've seen something profound. This is a revelation. Wow. And then they also look at John Gruden and say, oh, man, he's out there trying to fake it. Ham it up for the cameras. You ever been in an NFL locker room? This is what they all do. Because you got to think about what you need to do. You need to get 53 guys to go through that beautiful hell called that line of scrimmage every single play. And you can't just talk in reality with a dry script. Oh, it got to get theatrical. It has to get magical. And they all have a stick. Every coach I've ever played for. Let's go to Bill Parcells, who will walk through the Dallas locker room And then when he gets to the end and no players could see him, but my locker was right there by the exit, I peek, he's like, I like that. Nobody could say a word to him just to go over there to rile you up. You think Bill Belichick really coaches his team in two-word answers like he does for the media? It's a stick. Bill Parcells, I told you about. Wade Phillips. Let's go to all the other coaches, the great ones. Greg Popovich, you think he talks like that to his players for real? So, yeah, I think part of the charisma, part of the sell job is to actually put on that performance. Not mad at it.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's just most of these guys don't have AB contradicting them at every turn. But go ahead, Eric.
Look, I don't think it's shtick. I think that this is who he is, and this is who his personality is. We saw, what, a two-second clip from one team meeting, and during the course of that—
That was actually 30 seconds, but go ahead.
Well, you know, whatever, where he said about putting their
foot up someone's rear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's this one small clip where he was obviously frustrated with either the way that practice had gone or—
AB's feet, perhaps?
There could be a million different things to get you to the point of frustration. But I think he's sincere to what his personality is. It's not that dramatically different than what I remember when he was coaching before. So if he's true to his personality, then it's not stick at all.
No,
it's who he is.
I love you, coach, because you're a coach. But it is stick. It's just it's a heightened sense of what you are. Like, he's exaggerating what he believes, and it's still what he believes.
But you think that's the first time he said that? No. I mean, I know Hard Knocks was there, but you know he said that before. And
right.
And typically with coaches, you know, you have a timeline of when you approach different things. Maybe that was his, you know, timeline to get
fired up. It's time to blow it up.
I agree with both of them. I agree with both of you guys. Some of it is shtick. Some of it is genuine. I think the thing about John Gruden that he knows is that he's likable. His guys like him. So, yeah, they do buy into it. They also buy into the opportunity that's there. So I know you're sitting there thinking, like, I don't know. Here's the thing about it. The reason why they buy in is because there's an opportunity. As long as that opportunity exists, they're going to buy in. They're going to buy into a coach. There are very few coaches. You mentioned Parcells. There are a few coaches out there that you look at. I looked at Andy Reid as one of those guys, and I just keep it short on Andy Reid, but he's one of those guys that he's a player's coach, coaches by Herm Edwards is a name that pops into your head. You'll run through a wall for him. It's genuine. You know it's genuine. But then there's certain guys that you say, you know what, maybe it doesn't seem to be as genuine, but it's not disingenuous either.
Right.
And you're looking at John. John has done a great job of having relationships. He knows people. He knows the players. He has relationships with it. So when you see him coming, it's like, oh, man, that's John. You might even be comfortable enough to say, oh, that's Coach JG. Yeah, he's one of those type of dudes. You can relate to him. And I think as long as his shtick is relatable to those guys and they win, as long as they're winning, and he's relatable.
No question. But I think y'all are missing my point. Or I haven't explained my point properly. Let me say that. Working with Al Pacino is different than working with Jim Carrey or Chris Rock or someone like that. And so not all actors gel together. And what I'm saying is when you're in a movie co-starring Antonio Brown, you may have to come with a different acting shtick. Because it just doesn't sell the same when Antonio Brown is making a fool out of the entire organization and you're in front of cameras, in front of your team, acting like you're the toughest coach in the planet and we're going to put a foot up someone's rear and the players are sitting there, hey, man, how about you put some cream on AB's feet? How about you get AB to show up and act like a professional? It just all rings phony.
Well, look, he's acting in this movie, as you say, but he's also producing it and he's directing it.
I know.
And sometimes in movies, it's well known that you get some diva actresses or actors, but the movie needs to be made and it needs to be a quality movie. And you may not keep that actor around or bring that actor in for the next movie, but you need him for this one. So he's going to do whatever he needs to do as the director and as the producer to make sure it all works. And at the end of the day, people are happy with the product this year.
Tremendous response, and it's accurate. And that's what I saw last night from Hard Knocks. Again, these coaches have editing of, and again, he put out a Hard Knocks movie last night. Let me, in the middle of all this chaos, I'm still John Gruden, is what he was trying to convey to the audience. And a lot of people ate it up. People loved it. I just don't think the guys in that locker room did.
I think to his defense, I've never met one coach from Little League to the pros that treats everybody the same.
No.
And nor should
we've all been, should. We've right, all exactly. been measured and weighed differently.
By that talent.
And I'm going to tell you right now, it feels good when you're on top. And AB's on top. So he's going to get the benefit of the doubt because his accomplishments have called for him to be treated a certain type of way. I went to the Washington Redskins in my rookie year and was around Deion Sanders, Daryl Green, Marco Coleman, Bruce Smith, just to name a few. Mark Carrier, shouts out to Long Beach Poly. And they were treated differently. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. Deion Sanders, one of the hardest working dudes when we played the game. But Deion had a lounge chair, heated lounge chair, massager in the chair. That was before they even became a thing. And he had it in the meeting room.
Yeah.
He had his own lamp in the meeting room.
And again,
everybody going to be treated differently.
Wonderful point. You're accurate. I'm not 1,000% right on this. And I may be wrong about this. And Eric, you may know better. And look, I just think AB strips a coach of his dignity in a way that I don't think Lawrence Taylor, Deion Sanders, some of the other examples do. I just think AB's so out of pocket, and what he did to Mike Tomlin and that Pittsburgh organization is proof to me. Because again, I think Mike Tomlin's a hell of a coach, and I think he's going to prove it this year now that he's up away from Antonio Brown. But again, when it comes to Deion Sanders, you know what showed up with Deion Sanders? Super Bowls. Everywhere Deion went, Super Bowls follow. Lawrence Taylor, Super Bowls follow. Jerry Rice, any of the other great divas, off-the-chart divas, I haven't seen that with AB.
Well, the Pittsburgh situation, when they got to a moment of truth and they had to make a choice, obviously Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season, so you don't get rid of him. And Ben has won the Super Bowl. So you keep him, AB loses in that situation and leaves. But don't read the body language of a locker room by watching Hard Knocks or anything else.
I'm not reading their body language because that's pre-produced by John Gruden.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that the body language of every locker room is going to be the same as just how many people are in those populations. You got the guys who are asleep during the meetings. Mm-hmm. You got the eye rollers, like, whatever, dog. I hear you. I'm a ball. I don't need all this. Mm-hmm. You got guys who are head nodding at everything coach says and ain't going to do damn thing when it comes on to the field. So you got all these types of personalities. It doesn't matter until that rubber meets the road. And AB's like, when the rubber meets the road, there's no one in this locker room that's going to try harder and do better than I am.
Well, look, here's the other thing. When you make these types of deals, when you make compromises in terms of what you expect from a player because of their ability, then you do it with your eyes wide open. Mm. And you know that the results are going to be difficult times. And you know that during those 6 days, you're going to have to manage them to get to day 7. But you made that deal, so you live with the cost of doing that type of business. It's not for everybody. Some people are willing to do it. When they do it, you got to suck it up and deal with all the stuff that comes with it.
Another phenomenal point by all of y'all. My point is that he produced a great television performance last night. I think the reality within his own locker room, because AB has acted such a fool, is just not going to land well. It's going to be hard for him to lead that football team. Eric Mangini and LeVar Arrington are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Cleveland, where all eyes will once again be on Baker Mayfield this year, whose brash style helped propel him to an outstanding rookie season and also landed him in public feuds with everyone from Hugh Jackson to our buddy Colin Cowherd. But don't expect a different Baker this year, with the quarterback saying in a recent profile, quote, "I probably won't ever change. That's just me. I mean, there's growing up and lessons you learn throughout life, but you know, I'm always going to be who I am and enjoy that. What I've done my whole life has gotten me here. There's obviously improvements and things I have to work on every day, but how I handle myself and how I approach it, that can't change." All right, question to you.
Did you ever do any classroom projects in front of the class? I mean, you imagine yourself doing that?
Right mindset for Baker?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love it. Well-conditioned mindset and great returns on that mindset. And that mental makeup, what Baker possesses, brings juice. To a franchise that hasn't won a playoff game since 1994, you need a little life, need a little juice. And that's what he brings. That presence, when we talk about the game of skill and greater game of will, where do you get that extra motivation, that extra layer? Because you've seen it. You've been in the locker room pregame. Football players have to go to a special place. almost a little psychosis, just to really psych yourself into going to battle. And Baker adds to that element just by his presence alone at the quarterback position. Imagine being in a fourth quarter game with Baker Mayfield one possession away, and he's under center. You just feel life from him. So I'm with him. He said he could make some tweaks here and there, but wholeheartedly stay who you are.
I don't know very many great athletes or great performers or great achievers that haven't changed, that don't understand that the importance of not having an ego, of being able to recognize your weaknesses and push through those. I think one of the things that makes New England such a consistent franchise is they go into the season with who they hope to be, and then they realize who they need to be, and they change, and that's how they're able to compete every single year. And we all know the definition of insanity. It's doing the same thing over and over again. Look, if you want to go down the first series of a preseason game and score a touchdown and then celebrate like you won the Super Bowl, yeah, that's great. Maybe that's the energy you need. But don't be surprised when people respond to that and want to shut that stuff down. I think change is an important part of maturity and self-awareness.
Yeah, it's evolution. That's human nature. So I agree with you there. And I agree with you as well in terms of being that person, that symbol that gives you belief. Personally, looking at the way he's handling things and all of the scrutiny that is on him, he's a polarizing figure. So people are looking at him beyond what the game represents. And I think personally, looking at his response, I want to cuss y'all out. I really want to tell y'all how I feel. But since I'm not going to do that, because that could cost me here, and there, I'm just really going to keep it to, you know what, I'm not going to change. So it's a generalized statement. I think it's a tongue-in-cheek statement. I don't think for 2 seconds Baker really buys into the fact that I'm not going to change. I think he does subscribe to the fact that he needs to evolve as he grows within the league. He just got married. That's his change. Your actions say change. So you can say what your words are. And I look at it as just words. I think he is a guy who understands that he needs to flow like the water trying to make it down the hill.
Well, he is the quarterback. He does set a tone for that team. They did just add Odell Beckham Jr., a guy who's been a great productive player but needs to make some changes, I think, to be a more mature player that contributes to a winning environment. And Baker could help set that tone by acknowledging that, you know what, even me, Baker Mayfield, and I've had success, I won a Heisman Trophy, I walked on two places, but I'm not perfect. And so when I hear people say, I'm not going to change, I'm never going to change, it's like, well, I'm perfect. And I just haven't met that person yet that is perfect. We're all in need of change. And so I wish that he would say it a little different and believe a little different. And I know he's had a tremendous amount of success. And success is the greatest intoxicant. And you throw on money and fame on top of that, and I don't blame him for going, man, why would I change? Well, but I've lived 52 years. You got to.
Well, I mean, using your example in Belichick, who really leads that situation and program, he's not changing. He's consistent in his messaging. He's consistent in his ways. He's consistent in his approach. And that stability is what you start to buy into it. Now, it's successful, so why would he change it? And then you look at Baker, he's like, this is successful as well. The only difference is, likeability in the way I'm doing it. Maybe it strikes you different. It's polarizing. So therefore you don't see it. But this isn't a guy who loses himself because he celebrates. This is a guy who's like, he won the Heisman. He became the number one overall pick. He's brought juice to this franchise. No, he hasn't won a Super Bowl yet. It's going into his second year. But if we're going to now start to demerit him by the way he goes about his process, I don't see where we really can pull him apart yet.
Well, no. Go ahead.
I'm just to react to the Belichick comment, Bill Belichick coached the 34 defense since 1985. And then after they lost the second Super Bowl to the Giants, he was willing to switch to a 4-3. To me, if that's not the epitome of willingness to change something that you've done for years and years and dramatically shift a philosophy, but he knew that was the best thing for the organization and the team at the time. I see Baker Mayfield as a guy who's had tremendous success. Things have gone well for him, and he's so sensitive to criticism now. What's it going to be like when it gets tough? What's it going to be like when they hit those 2 or 3 game losing streaks, when the criticism starts to mount up? You better change, because it doesn't go well all the time for everybody.
I'm going to say the other thing, and we're going to pass on Darnell's question. I'm going to say the other thing that about Belichick, the difference between Belichick and Baker Mayfield is Belichick may probably be the most arrogant person on the planet privately. Publicly, this dude bathes himself in humility. His tone of voice, he never gets loud. Everything about him publicly, and then maybe it's a little smug, some of his answers, but I see a guy that's really pretty humble about his approach, and I see a guy in Baker Mayfield that seems a bit over the top and arrogant.
And let me ask you, how many points does the public score on any given Sunday?
Excuse
Zero.
Me? The public?
The public, yeah. How are we helping?
No.
We're not helping. So for that, that's part of shtick. I want you guys to think X, and I'm going to do Y. He can't coach that same way that he gives his public messaging because that's too short. That's no content. And he does just the opposite in closed doors. He has an actual game plan, and they dive into details. He never dives into the details with us as the public. So for Baker Mayfield to say, I'm going to be transparent or closer to who I am in script publicly and privately, I don't think we should go out there and take a shot at it.
You know, I think it's valuable to look at the Baker Mayfield aspect from this perspective as well. You mentioned Odell Beckham. He doesn't want Odell to change. So I don't think he wants to put out there the message of, Odell, I'm changing, so I think you should change. I really believe that they look at who they are, what identity they're trying to build, and they buy into it. I think Jarvis is a very mature person. I think that Odell is a very mature person from what I gather from them. I don't know Baker very well, but if their work ethic matches what they're going to bring to the field, then I don't think that being colorful personalities, I mean, I think back to the Rams team with Torrey and all those guys and Oz Hakeem and how much fun they had and how they joked around and did a lot of things. This is just that 2.0, really, in my opinion.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
LeVar Arrington is back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. I got a fresh new can of Twitter off.
New can alert.
Oh, Twitter off.
Of the day.
You can't prepare today, huh?
I did. All right, what's popping?
Yeah, we're going to talk about Jay-Z, whose entertainment company, Roc Nation, just signed a major deal with the NFL. Jay will now be in the leading role with the league's social justice program, and then Roc Nation will be kind of in the leading role for entertainment content, including the halftime for the Super Bowl show. But we all know just last year, Jay-Z tried to convince Travis Scott not to perform at the Super Bowl show, and you know, Twitter doesn't forget, but one person even tweeting out, Jay-Z working with the NFL after trying to tell Travis Scott not to. So I want to ask you, do you guys like Jay-Z making this deal with the NFL after questioning Scott's halftime performance?
Love it. Love it, love it, love it, because the truth eventually all comes to the surface. And look, man, I my position on Colin Kaepernick from the get-go was like, man, don't do something that interferes with your money. The NFL is a vehicle for you to make money. That's all that the NFL has to offer you. Go get it. And unfortunately, Cap didn't take the advice. Now Jay-Z is giving the same advice, in my opinion. His actions speak louder than words. The NFL's a vehicle to make money. The social justice stuff on the field just isn't the smart play. So I love, and I, you know, normally I criticize Jay-Z, but this is a smart move.
It's certainly a smart move. For clarification purposes, Jay-Z said he called Travis Scott to tell him don't take second fiddle to Maroon 5.
Uh-oh.
That's what he said today.
Look, I felt that in the moment. I said he's not calling him in the moment when that came out, because there was never a transcript of what Jay-Z said. No. Reportedly, Jay-Z is calling Travis Scott.
When you throw a Cap jersey on, though, it does kind of make it seem like it's about Cap. But go ahead.
Oh, yeah, you can add that up if you want to, but at the same time, he also called Cap for this situation. So
After the fact, go ahead.
It's during the fact, because there's no fact. There's like a conversation to make this a reality, and Cap was involved in that conversation. Travis Scott, your last number one album was when?
August
2018.
Like, Sicko Mode.
Right before the Super Bowl. When was Maroon 5's? 2014. He basically said,
you can leapfrog them dudes and be the headliner. That said, this is a smart play by Jay-Z to say, look, I need to partner with the power, and I need to make sure I have control, I have content, and a seat at the table that's being respected and equitable. So, yeah, smart play.
You know, every coach that had a great impact on my life had this one saying. And they said they loved us and cared about us. And I believed it. I believed it. But the one thing he said, when it comes down to it, it's not personal. It's just business. This is just business with Jay-Z. And if y'all really want this to be the mic and me to drop the mic, that's the mic dropping. How many hours are we on right now that Kaepernick has been denied work? I'm done. If Kaepernick gets hired by the NFL today, are y'all upset or are you happy? Mic is dropped, man. We got a problem with Jay-Z getting business, but if Kaepernick isn't denied more work and gets his work, now we okay.
Well, I'm going to say that Jay-Z is very clear. I'm a business man. And so he's always about business. The people that have tried to turn the NFL into something other than a business are mistaken and being made fools of. Yeah. Dardo, you got more?
Yeah, I want to add this point. The New York Times is reporting that also Robert Kraft was very instrumental in getting this deal done in order to improve the league's kind of image by getting more celebrity endorsements with their social justice programs. And Boston's WEEI had a quote saying, the NFL's Q rating has taken a considerable hit in recent years due to the Kaepernick saga and many of its owners' ties to President Trump. So is this a smart move by the NFL to partner with Jay-Z?
Now, I think Jay-Z's made a very smart move. I'm kind of withholding judgment on whether this is going to work for the NFL fully, because to me, the NFL is trying to use Jay-Z because they know we're headed towards a very volatile political year. This election cycle over the next year is going to be bonkers. And the NFL doesn't want to be swallowed up by it. And I think they're hoping Jay-Z can help them in that regard. I'm not so sure it's going to work.
I think it will work because you have two worthy partners. Like the NFL, king of all sports in our country. Let's just be real about this. And Jay-Z certainly has his hand and his pulse of our culture understood fully. Whether you disagree or agree with him, Jay-Z has always been about what's next. And I mean, Jay-Z, his impact, one, he's not even on social media. And he's like, y'all can talk about me good, bad, ugly, don't give a damn. I'm going to live my life. And it's crazy. I saw Jay-Z when he's like, tell everybody to put on button-ups, stop wearing jerseys. Poor Mitchell and Ness. All them damn jerseys was gone, out of business. And they still around, but come
they
on,
still
y'all.
Around.
Impact. Jay-Z says, stop spending thousands of dollars on your car aftermarket and rims and all that. All of a sudden, everybody walking, start going stock rims and stuff. Like, this dude has his pulse on the culture. So, yeah, it's a smart move because there's two willing, worthy partners that's going to make this happen.
It's 100% a smart move because Jay-Z isn't going to do anything to mess his brand up at this point in his career. He's one of the most legendary entertainers. He has done something that most entertainers have not been able to do. The last guy that I recall getting close to this was Master P. And the culture has exploded since then. His was a debacle. Super dope businessman, but it was a debacle. Jay-Z with Master P.
Oh, stop that.
It wasn't good.
Next.
Don't debate it.
Yeah, don't debate it. Next comment.
The point is that with Jay-Z and what he represents, I think it's a great move because he does understand what the culture represents and people will buy in.
Here's where I'll push back against you guys. I think it's much harder to control or dictate to the culture. If you've looked online, people are apoplectic. And, you know, people that Cap supporters are irate and think Jay-Z has sold out the world and how come Cap isn't a part of this. I think this is going to have some mix. I got to see how the backlash plays out. I think you'll have certain NFL players, Eric Reed, other Kenny Stills perhaps, that will still want their attention. And if protesting and taking a knee and diving knee deep in politics is the way to get it, they're going to do it regardless of what.
Is Mr. Antisocial sourcing social media the loud minority as the polling on this?
I'm looking at the people that influenced Kaepernick, Ness Nitty, Sean King. I'm looking at what their reaction to this. And so I'm just not sure if they're, because again, the NFL to me isn't reacting to public, they're reacting to social media. The whole political problem to me for the NFL is via social media, not in the real world.
It's the best, safest move. Bringing Jay-Z on board it's the best, safest move for the NFL at this point.
All right, what's next?
Yeah, so Jay-Z has actually already spoken with Kaepernick about the partnership, and when he was asked if he has plans on involving Cap, Jay-Z said, quote, "You have to ask him, I'm not his boss." So do you guys think Kaepernick should be involved?
Well, I would need to see Kaepernick's musical resume before I would sign off on Cap being involved in the music aspect. And then I would like to see, beyond kneeling, his social justice resume. Mm. The guy doesn't talk. If you don't talk, Jay-Z's out here talking.
Yeah.
Kenny Steele's talking. Other people.
Eric Reed,
people talking. Cap doesn't talk. So if you don't talk and you don't make music, what's your qualifications to work in this initiative?
Look, I'm with Jay-Z. Ask Cap. And Jay-Z's like, I did ask Cap, and he's not here. So any further involvement will have to be by his doing, not by our pulling. Jay-Z learned a valuable lesson when him and Dame Dash, you know, started off, you know, Rock Aware, Rock Nation, and all, back in those days. Like, Jay-Z ain't with all that smoke, man. It's just like, look, keep your eye on the prize. And if we're not going to continue moving this forward, and a lot of people get disturbed when your focus is capital. But what do you have to show for all your content and creation if you don't pull capital, which is going to change you and your culture and your environment and generational wealth? I hate when people say, he only about money. I'm like, what are you about? And look, Kaepernick, if Kaepernick wants to get involved, you know they were willing to involve him. Obviously, he doesn't want to. In terms of social justice issues, Kaepernick doesn't want to go into open forum about that because he will get exposed. There are PhD people in private who I've talked to who are on the ground who are like, that's never happening. And less is more is his campaign for those reasons, because there are people who are really vested in this. And Kaepernick's the face of it right now, but this is an age-old problem. This was when you were growing up, when I was growing up, and now he has this power, but I think he wants to exercise it in the less is more campaigning, and it's unfortunate.
Well, he's had a lot of people speak for him, and that's probably why he has maintained silence. It's like you said, I think it's more impactful, or I won't say it's more, I think it is, but some people may think it's more impactful to have other people tell your story and scream your praises and say what it is that you're doing.
I can't do it. There's a reason why you don't see me in a Speedo bikini.
Safe.
I can't do it.
You could do it.
No.
You could do it if you wanted to. Now what the results of it will be something that's not for debate.
Jeans, shorts, and socks.
But that might not work either. I mean, it's all about how you feel about yourself, Whit. And I'm going to tell you right now, we know how Kaepernick feels about himself right now. He feels like he's being denied work. And that is why you let other people talk for you, because then you could say behind the scenes, I didn't say that.
Well, I represented let me this just singular keep it real. Deal. This whole denied work. I don't want to hear from nobody in this economy sitting around, I'm denied work. The NFL ain't the only job.
That's fair.
You know, I know a bunch of people that wanted to play in the NFL.
That's fair.
I can raise my hand.
That's fair.
You got transition to something else.
That's fair.
But so quit why I'm denied work. Okay. No, you're too lazy to get off your ass and get a job.
But if you are being sensible about denied work and you have the hours mounting on the show.
Get a real job.
Okay.
Join the rest of
them. Move on from it. Jay-Z, all right.
Eric Mangini's back. Let's move to the Dallas Cowboys, who don't seem to be any closer to signing Dak Prescott to a new deal, especially after reports started flying that Dak was asking for $40 million a year. Mm. But even with the quarterback's negotiations going sideways, Jerry Jones says the situation shouldn't affect what his QB does on the field.
It's not an issue. His contract is to playing frame of mind, what we're going to be doing this year. It's not an issue at all. It has no bearing on, as I see it, it's something that is more about the future.
You buying that these negotiations will have no impact on Dak this season?
I am buying it. I think of all the attributes that I love about athletes, high-level athletes, the greatest is the ability to compartmentalize, like to just simply grab pieces of life and put them in their proper order at the right times and prioritize. So a Dak Prescott, who's been through his own traumatic experiences, I've been through it as well, lost my mother, he lost his mother to cancer, both of us. I bring that up because it gives you a greater perspective and a bandwidth to deal with situations differently. And imagine a guy who's picked in the fourth round behind Tony Romo and what that mindset is. Fourth round's no guarantees on the NFL roster. We used to always say, first three, you're good. After that, and then lower, obviously, good luck. And this is a guy who all of a sudden, in the blink of an eye, is the franchise quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. We reset his expectations, but there's still a part of him in his blood flow that's like, man, I'm on borrowed time. He's made $2.7 million in 3 years, and he's going to make $2 million this year. And everyone's like, oh, my God, if he doesn't get his contract right now, how's he going to respond? What? Based on what he's been through in his personal life, based on what he's been through in his professional life, you think this is the disturbance? When he's guaranteed, unless lightning hits him, $60 million going forward. Guaranteed, unless he just falls off the planet Earth. I think he's fine. Jerry knows that, and that's why the negotiation's slow playing.
I think, if anything, it could help his performance, and it could help the Dallas Cowboys because he's playing for his next contract. And typically, when players are playing for the next contract, they perform at an extremely high level. We saw it with Joe Flacco. What was his best year? The year that he was playing for his contract. So from an organizational perspective, there's no reason to rush this. He's going to play. He's got to play really well, because if he doesn't, the number's only going to go down. But he's got the potential to make the number skyrocket. But it's completely controlled by him. So I think it's a positive thing.
I think of what Tribe Called Question here, stakes is high?
No, that's De La Soul.
De La Soul, stakes is high, I'm sorry. And so that's what this reminds me of. Stakes are very high, and I get that Dak's had some success and everybody overcomes things, but I don't think Dak is fully aware who he is. Because if he was, I think this contract issue would have been settled. Dak thinks he's Russell Wilson, and he's not. And I think he's going to try to do too much this year because of this contract situation. And I think the personalities in that locker room are going to change because of this contract situation, if it continues to play out and play out and play out. And if Dak goes over $30 million a year, Lord help him, I think those guys in that locker room are going to eat him up. So I completely disagree with Jerry Jones. Right. I think this league is obsessed with money. I watching Hard Knocks last night. Rookies come up and talk, and they got to tell what their signing bonus is.
Yeah.
The league is obsessed with money. And when Dak walks in there at $30 million or whatever, or if he doesn't sign, whatever, it's going to be a nightmare, in my opinion.
I disagree with that. Like, I knew who I was when I was a free agent the first time. And I knew I wasn't better than Bruce Smith. And I certainly knew I wasn't better than Junior Seau. But I got paid more than both of them. And you know what? It just had to go that way because I was next. And it's just like you got to go with the inflation. It's rising all these boats. And I don't give a damn you got a yacht. Guess what? My boat's up here at the same float level as you. And Dak knows himself. He's built for both worlds. He's built for the understated fourth round guy who came and is taking it all in.
Marcellus, I'm going to say this. When you got your money, when healthy, you could go get it. Plain and simple. Didn't need no help. You could go get it. That's not Dak Prescott.
I don't think Dak is good. What do you mean?
I don't think that's a totally fair assessment.
I know.
Now, look, guys are consumed with money. And unfortunately for those rookies, those signing bonuses are a lot less than they used to be.
Man. You know,
the new CBA.
He's made a ton of money off the field.
But you're not only paying a guy for who he is, but you're also paying a guy for who you think he can be. And sometimes we look at this and say that the player is going to stay where they are. That's not true. Because of traits, he has the potential to keep growing and keep rising.
I could be a Ditter Salva. I could be. I just lost the weight. Uncle Jimmy's here.
You know.
Oh.
Your thoughts. Big dummy of the day.
Man, listen here.
the big dummy of the day go to somebody who think that they can use a big word like Jesse Jackson and don't nobody pick up on it. Marcoleptic. Did you hear that word? Apoplectic? Oh, to be overcome with fear or indignant and anger. Did you hear him say, apoplectic, Tupac, go ahead and rock this?
Tupacalypse?
Yeah. Did you hear that? Or did he just kept going? Apoplectic.
He plowed through.
Well, here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about John Gruden. Yep. John Gruden, the hardest working man in football, epitomizes the James Brown song, Talking Loud and Saying Nothing.
This is a problem with access. When people get access, like the Hard Knocks of 24/7, they think they've seen something profound. This is a revelation. Wow. And then they also look at John Gruden and say, oh, man, he's out there trying to fake it. Ham it up for the cameras.
All right, Uncle Jimmy. As you know, I said John Gruden won an Emmy last night. Better than Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad. Your thoughts?
Where's our Emmy? This is the very reason I tell y'all that y'all need me to be sitting up there at that big table.
Oh, man.
I need to be part of that Whitlaw, because I don't know what the hell you talking about.
What?
Hey, man, how you didn't watch Hard Knocks last night and see what everybody else in America saw, I don't know. Because I looked at Hard Knocks last night, and I saw my man John Gruden up there, man. He looked like Gabe Kaplan in Welcome Back, Carter. Man, you see him up there on the chalkboard trying to teach them damn sweat hogs. They wasn't paying attention to nothing. Man, John Gruden, man, God bless his heart. God bless Gabe Kaplan's heart, man. He could have took a job anywhere.
Stop.
He took a job at his old high school with them old badass kids that didn't nobody want to deal with. Got kicked out of all the other schools.
Yep.
Come on, man, but you know what?
Huh.
Mr. Carter believed in them kids.
Yeah.
And you know what? Just like John Gruden believed in them Raiders, they might surprise you because somebody believed in them.
Think about it.
Think about this. Wait a minute. A.B., that's Vinny Barbarino. The heartthrob, all he wanted to do was go to the big city. He didn't care about learning nothing. Showed up to class late, you know? Hey, Dan Carr, on a horse shack. He just wanted to get along. Just that dumbass lad. That's it. Hey, Freddie Boom Boom Washington. Who's that? Vontaze Burfict. Hey, and then there's Juan Epstein.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one who was always in trouble with the law. Remember, he would jump in Mr. Carter's window just out the clear blue sky because he running from the law. You never knew what kind of trouble he was going to get into.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was Ricky Incognito.
I knew it, Richie.
That was Richie. So how you didn't watch Hard Knocks last night and just feel sorry for John and just go, welcome back, where your dreams are your ticket out.
Hey,
welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about.
Hit it, brother.
Whoa. That's pretty good.
Who'd have thought they lead you?
All right, that's pretty good.
Who'd have thought they
lead you? All right, we got to go. John Gruden is on a crash course. He's down to the dumpster fire in my rankings. A 39, 4 job performer, 17 all-time greatness, 13 character, 5 authenticity after watching that Hard Knocks this
morning. Yeah, y'all tease him a lot.
39, dumpster fire.
Oh, man. You low on him. I got him a little higher than that.
Y'all
job performance. He did
spot.
Win a preseason game. So you would have destroyed him if they would have lost the game on top of all that. On and off the camera, he's the same old Chucky, man. I give him respect for that. So authenticity goes up as well. Got him higher than you, bro.
Look, the public once again agrees with me, Marcellus. Our Twitter poll had 39% of the public has him as a dumpster fire.
That dumpster fire button getting a lot of action, brother, on this show.
It's John Gruden.
Y'all vote for real?
I liked Uncle Jimmy's Welcome Back, Carter deal. That was pretty good. All right, we'll see you tomorrow.
Welcome back, John. Welcome back.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.